Hello, my name is Craig Faust with Life Care Counseling, and you are listening to St. Louis Therapist Spotlight. And I am just going to meet with another fellow therapist that I know does good work and talk with them a little bit about their practice and their specialties. So if it's something that you feel like may be a good fit for you or someone that you know, then you may be able to get in contact with them. So without any further delay, here we go. Hello, my name is Craig, and I'm here with Dvorka. Dvorka, can you say hi to everyone?
Hi, everyone. This is Dvorka Marovic. Thank you for coming in today, and welcome to my practice.
Well, thank you. So what's the name of your practice?
It's a really long name. It's my first name, and then I added clinical counseling. I could not think of any other better name.
Hey, that's perfect. And I just even want to kind of mention, even while I'm sitting here, thinking, so you are actually in Clayton, uh-huh. And we're actually on the 12th floor right now,
yeah.
And sitting in your office, and I just actually kind of want to mention that, like, you really do have a great view of the cityscape here, uh-huh. But also even getting here was very easy for me, especially in Clayton, because I feel like sometimes whenever people come to Clayton, it's like very imposing. I feel like it was very easy to find this place here, so I did want to make mention of that. So, Dvorka, can you just tell me a little bit about your own background and wanting to get into clinical psychology and wanting to get into counseling? And can you tell me a little bit about your educational background?
Sure. Well, let me start by talking a little bit about my background. So I am originally from Montenegro, mm-hmm. which is a small country in Southern Europe. And I came to the States after high school and attended University of Tampa in Tampa, Florida, where I got my BA in psychology. And that's where I discovered my passion for psychology and counseling. Mm-hmm. And then after Florida, I moved to St. Louis and I went to graduate school at AMSL, where I got my master's in community counseling. And I got my training in trauma treatment at the Center for Trauma Recovery.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And at the time, it was the cognitive processing therapy, and then later I got training in prolonged exposure. I also finished a two-year program in advanced psychodynamic psychotherapy mm-hmm. at St. Louis Psychoanalytic Institute. So when I was finishing my master's and looking for an internship, I was approached by a mental health agency who was specializing in trauma treatment for refugees. Mm-hmm. And because I spoke languages from former Yugoslavia, I was asked if I was interested because there were lots of Bosnian refugees in St. Louis, and there was really no clinicians who were fluent in Bosnian. So my native language is Serbian, but Bosnian is pretty much same when it comes to spoken, not written. Written okay. is a bit different because
there's similar types of roots when it's spoken, or
yeah it's Slavic, mm-hmm. Except Serbian has a Cyrillic alphabet and Bosnian doesn't, so yeah. Just written, it's different. So anyway, I was working with refugees, not just Bosnia, but from all over the world, Middle East, African countries. I work with clients who were also seeking like a political asylum from just all over the world. I work with many Nepalese clients. And then after working for this agency for a few years, I was with the Center for Survivors of Torture and War Trauma. Mm-hmm. I was there from 2003 till 2016. So I work as a therapist and then later as the clinical supervisor. So pretty much what I did individual therapy. I also supervised group therapy. Mm-hmm. I did trainings. I supervised clinicians. We had students from all universities pretty much, from just different departments, either counseling or clinical psychology from WashU, School of WashU. And then what else did we do? So I did that for a very long time, 17 years of doing like a trauma treatment.
That's a lot of work with trauma, but not only that, but trauma with all kinds of different people from all over.
Yeah.
You know, and I just kind of even want to rewind just a little bit. I want to make special mention too, is that I mentioned this before with some of my other interviews that I've done,
but
I think that there is something very unique about the healing process whenever you can talk to someone in their native language.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is about it, but I've seen different work where, you know, where people talk with, you know, to others in their second language, mm-hmm. and it just, as the therapeutic process goes, I think it's so much more helpful. And it's so awesome that you're able to help some of these people, especially, like you said, as far as the people that can speak different languages.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really have a lot of therapists that can speak multiple languages or anything.
It's definitely easier for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. First of all, my clients feel it's easier if they don't have to use the interpreter. Mm-hmm. One reason, it's confidentiality. You know, interpreter might be from their own neighborhood, or, you know, so it's much easier if they can directly talk to me. And then also, I think there is difference if you are speaking a language, also when it comes to trauma processing, because mm-hmm. the trauma happened, you know, when you are using the language that connects directly to that experience, there is something.
The brain doesn't have to go through a translation process to see, like, all right, how can I now communicate this? But now I want to then translate the mm-hmm. thing I'm trying to communicate.
Yeah.
Like, it's just more degrees of separation from it.
And there are some words that are really difficult to translate, you mm-hmm. know, from one language to another. But, you know, therapy can be effective also with interpreters, because when I work with Afghani or Nepali, like, I actually have assessment coming up on Thursday with a Nepali client. So I use interpreters. So, mm-hmm. you know, you can also do effective therapy, but I think it's easier if it's done in a native language.
Mm-hmm.
But also, outside of that, the client has to connect with a therapist. I think relationship, it's a really key, you know, that's a number one piece.
You're definitely right. Yeah. I'm kind of wondering, you talked to me about a lot of different types of populations that you work with so far. A lot of them, kind of the common theme that I'm hearing is trauma and, immigrants. So I kind of wonder, can you give me an idea of, and that's the work that you've done more in the past. Can you tell me a little bit about where you see yourself now, what kind of people that you serve now, that you're in your own practice here?
Yeah, so I left the trauma center in 2017 and started my practice full-time. So I had mm-hmm. a small private practice on the side for many years, but then March of 2017, I just started full-time. And now 75% of my clients are Americans
mm-hmm.
who are working on either improving their interpersonal relationships, or maybe they are struggling with some transition in life, going through a divorce, or maybe mm-hmm. I'm working with some students who are adjusting to life in, you know, college and moving from home. I work with some adolescents who are struggling with social anxiety, or maybe their parents are going through divorce. So that's like about 75% of my clients. The other 25 are international clients who mm-hmm. some of them had trauma and they have PTSD. Some of them they just moved to United States and they're adjusting. Some of them are couples from different countries who are taking couples therapy. So I also, outside of therapy, I do, I work with immigration lawyers and I do assessments. Mm-hmm. I work with psychiatrists and I help with different type of mental health waivers or maybe a political asylum seekers. I work with them and do assessments. I also do some supervision for PLPCs who are working towards the licensure. And I do some trainings. I have, in the last few years, I have developed workshops for WashU for mm-hmm. their professional development program at Brown School. And then I do trainings in my native country in the summer, first week of July.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a lot going on.
Yeah, I do.
You know, that being said, I did hear a theme with some of the people that you work with,
mm-hmm.
and the theme seems to be like whenever they're going through transitions in their life, whether uh-huh. or not that's when they're younger, going through transitions, or they're going through transitions in their relationships, going through transitions from moving, or even transitions from cultures. So it seems like you really like doing work that involves helping people through transitions.
Yeah, I have experienced it myself, and so I can relate personally and professionally.
Yeah, now, can you remind me, you said that, how old were you whenever you moved to the United States? Was it
after high school?
Okay. So, yeah, 18. So for you, you're 19. Old enough still, even like for the implications of that move. It's like, okay, so you've actually been through it yourself. So being able to help some of these people, like, I wonder, like, for you, that's kind of like more of a natural thing since you've already had to be through, you know, through something like that.
Yeah, I have walked through the experience. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's, so I feel like I fully really connect and understand.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really important in doing any type of work with therapy, is whenever you can connect on a personal level with some of the people that you're helping. Now, I kind of wonder, and you said you do assessments and everything. I want to be able to get to that piece later. But even just while we're on this piece, can you just kind of give me an idea of whenever, you know, let's say that I'm listening to this right now and I'm like, all right, hey, like this sounds pretty good. You know, maybe Dvorka is someone that I feel like I should come and see. What may I be experiencing if I'm listening to this that would kind of let me know that, you know, you'd be a good fit for me and that I should go ahead and give you a call and set something up?
Okay. Well, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I like to work with clients who are working on improving their relationships. So maybe somebody's trying to improve a relationship with their spouse or with their family members. Maybe they are going, you know, through divorce, or I'm working with parents. So what I like to do when somebody comes in, maybe I will sit down with them. I will explain how I do therapy. So typically what I do, I spend 3 to 4 sessions doing assessment. Mm-hmm. And the way I do assessment, so I have some intake paperwork that everybody fills out, and then I do Lifeline, technique from narrative exposure therapy, where I document somebody's events, both positive and negative, based on what's significant to them. And I do either adult attachment interview, or I do EFT, history of attachment. I'm kind of curious about those early life experiences and family rules of emotional expression. Mm-hmm. And then I do like a basic genogram, where I pay attention to family history, what has been passed down from generation to next. So I guess,
you're doing a really comprehensive exam.
Yeah, I like to do that. Kind of look at the transgenerational patterns, early life experiences, pay attention to what's happening here and now, how that connects to those early life experiences. And then, so I guess that would be a good fit for anybody who really is feeling stuck. Maybe stuck in relationships, stuck in career. Stuck with any major transition. As I said, you know, earlier, I really love working with adolescents. They just seem very open. I mean, at least the one I'm working with. I like to also, during the therapeutic process, integrate lots of techniques from mindfulness or neuroscience. I do meditation with lots of kids that I work with.
I want to slow you down just for a second. So, first things first, can you tell me a little bit about, if I'm someone that's listening to this, I'm like, what's mindfulness? Can you tell me a little bit about what that looks like?
So mindfulness is really awareness in the present moment. It's like being really aware of thoughts, aware of emotions, aware of bodily sensation, aware of breathing. I mean, that's what I do kind of with my clients. I kind of track all of that, and I teach them to really pay very close attention to what's happening with my mind, what kind of patterns are coming up, or what emotion am I experiencing, or there's some, you know, how is my body responding as I'm talking to you about something. So just really being aware in a present moment.
Yeah, really trying to help them kind of get out of their heads in some way.
Yeah, exactly.
So
and being kind of here and now, rather than maybe catastrophizing or, you know.
So you said that you use mindfulness-based things. I want to rewind a little bit too. You said that you use kind of like a narrative approach as well whenever you're doing your assessments. Do you ever use that whenever you're in session with clients at all?
Yeah, I do. You know, like I like to do the lifeline always with all my clients, regardless of what they have experienced. It just really gives me kind of like a bird's eye view on their, you know, life experiences.
Their life, their story.
Yeah, their story. And it's interesting to me what they report, what they consider a positive experience, what they consider it negative or traumatic. So positive usually kind of connects to protective factors, you know. So it could be secure attachments they had in early life. Maybe it could be strong spiritual faith or, you know. So I kind of pay attention to all of that. They're really, it's significant. And then also I ask them to write about certain events. You know, and I use some tools. I mentioned cognitive processing therapy. That is something called impact statement, where if somebody has been, if somebody experienced traumatic event, then I'm asking to describe the event in as much information as possible, to describe how the event affected their worldview or their, how they view themselves or others. I ask them to take into account all major areas of functioning, like their sense of safety, trust, self-esteem, intimacy.
Whenever you're asking to do that, is that part of that, you mentioned earlier, that exposure?
Yeah, so with CPT is cognitive processing therapy. It's like usually it's a protocol that's designed for clients who have been diagnosed with PTSD. So their PTSD can come from exposure to any traumatic event, can be natural disaster, can be war trauma, can be rape or any really traumatic experience. And CPT, it's usually 12 sessions, which last about 50 minutes, and it's mostly cognitive reprocessing. There are five modules, which I just mentioned: safety, trust, self-esteem, power and control, and intimacy. And the purpose is to explore how trauma affected somebody's worldview. The purpose is to identify stuck points or beliefs which are preventing somebody from healing from trauma.
So really exploring the depth of how trauma has affected their entire life.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you said in the reprocessing part. So give me an idea of like what you may be doing during the sessions that are kind of like really helping them get to that reprocessing part where maybe they're viewing their trauma differently or they're understanding it differently.
So we look at emotions. We look at emotions who are like, a you know, primary emotions that we experience, like a fear. But we also look at manufactured emotions like shame and explore those. We look at how they are interpreting certain events. Maybe if they are from a different ethnic group, maybe they view certain ethnic group like they're all, you know, you cannot trust anybody from this ethnic group. They're all bad. So that kind of, you know, belief generalizes to the entire group. So I would use some type of like a Socratic questioning, like what's the evidence? Have you ever had any positive experience with this specific group? Or is this kind of like all or nothing thinking, you know, just kind of like really asking questions where somebody can come to their own conclusion that, you know, the thinking that they have internalized, it's really
because they don't ask questions themselves.
Yeah.
I think that's so important, is being able to dive into some of these, is that a lot of times, unless we're sitting there and we kind of have someone that's like asking us questions about it, allowing us and giving the space to explore them, we don't naturally ask whether or not the way that we're thinking about things or how we're viewing things, you know, where did some of those constructs come from? Like, why is it that I think this way? Or what is it that's caused me to have this type of belief or this type of view on the world?
So that's, you know, briefly about CPT. Prolonged exposure, it's separate. It kind of falls under umbrella of cognitive behavioral therapy. So with prolonged exposure, we are working on a fear response. So what I do with clients, even if I do CPT or prolonged exposure, I will do psychoed about PTSD. I'll do psychoed about the brain. I will talk about amygdala and how you be in a fear state. You know, what happens with amygdala, how that affects prefrontal cortex and executive functions. I'll do psychoed first, but with prolonged exposure, there is usually two parts to it. There is imaginal exposure and in vivo. So in an imaginal exposure, the client would talk about their trauma in present tense. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of this is to recall as much information, thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations. And the more somebody does it, the sooner they will habituate, and the brain will realize that remembering trauma, it's not same as re-experiencing it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of purpose of exposure exercises. Usually I will schedule about 120 minutes because
that one has to be longer.
Yeah, it has to be longer. And then I always like to do some kind of activity afterwards to help somebody calm down, maybe progressive relaxation or some kind of guided imagery or something that will where they can learn, like, okay, even though I talked about this, I have a tool I can use to calm myself down.
They don't walk out of the office in a wreck because of what they've went through.
Yeah, I use the Sood scale to make sure that
they're good.
They calm down. And then in vivo, I have done that as well, you know, where I will do it outside of the office with clients who are, you know, afraid of certain places. So there will be actual real life exposure.
Yeah.
And we do it like gradually. So we create a scale where they can, you know, maybe going to a park, it's 20 on the scale, or, you know, so just we gradually work up to place
like whatever the fear is.
Whatever the fear is. Yeah.
Okay. I kind of wonder, so like for you, it sounds like you have a lot of different ways that you will help someone that has trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to manage that, to be able to manage that experience and understand it differently. You said, so I just want to make sure, CPI, exposure.
No, CPT. CPT. Prolonged exposure.
Prolonged exposure. And then this last one that you're just talking about, which is like that in vivo.
That's under prolonged exposure.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's part of prolonged exposure therapy, which can be imaginal or in vivo exposure. All right.
That's perfect. Yeah. I think that, like, especially going out into the environment and actually being close to the places where things have been really difficult for us.
Yeah.
Like, the first thing that kind of comes to my mind is like an accident site where you had like a car accident or anything like that, which it's sometimes really hard for people, and that's some of the ways that you might use the environment, use that location to help someone be able to understand, experience that differently.
Yeah, but that's, as I mentioned earlier, only about 25% of my work. Majority of my work is working with clients on different issues that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. So what might you use with some of those clients, or what kind of techniques or kind of like you do this very large assessment whenever they come in.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you're using a lot of different scales to understand the full picture of what's going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that someone is going through, you know, a transition in their life, whether that can be any of those things that you mentioned earlier. Well, what are some things that you might do to help them through those type of transitions or those feelings of being stuck?
Yeah. So once I do the assessment, you know, I usually will start with psychodynamic approach, which is a bit more insight-oriented, really paying attention to what's happening currently, how that connects to maybe some of their early life experiences. You know, if they have difficulty in relationships, maybe they have avoidant attachment style, or, you know, like really exploring whatever they are currently working on. But doing that detailed assessment is very helpful because we can always kind of go back and connect dots, and then we can look at like what do they want to keep that they have internalized from their family, what do they want to transform or let go of. And so besides psychodynamic, I use I pay a lot of attention to emotions, so I'm trying to really help my clients teach them skills such as one of the exercises I use a lot. It's a RAIN exercise. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, can you tell me about that?
But so RAIN stands for, the R is for recognizing the emotion. So when we can recognize and label emotion, actually amygdala will calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Some of like, I don't know if you're familiar with Dan Siegel, but he calls it name it to tame it. Like, if you can name emotion, you can tame it. So R is for recognizing, A is for allowing the emotion, because we know that once we accept the emotion, we can really learn from the emotion rather than avoiding. I, it's for investigating with compassion, just being really curious. So when we kind of engage the curiosity state, our amygdala calms down even more, and a different state in a prefrontal cortex lights up. So we are starting the rewiring process. Yeah. And, you know, the reason I say with compassion, because something shifts when we have compassion for ourselves or others. And so investigating piece would be really paying attention, like, what is this emotion trying to tell me? Where am I feeling this emotion in my body? Is there does it trigger certain memory? Is there a shape or color to it? Just really sitting and exploring. Mm-hmm. And the end part is just a natural awareness, the mindfulness piece. There's just kind of, the more we practice that, the sooner we learn how to regulate emotions.
It's easier to pick up on it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's really important in a lot of different ways. You said, like, even being able to name it, and mm-hmm. I think that you probably notice this a lot too, as I do, where a lot of times it's really hard for us to name or to label emotional experiences that we have, especially if there's a couple of them. And it seems mm-hmm. like you being able to sit in this space will help someone that has maybe like a really intense experience that's like, I have a couple different things going on, being able to understand each piece of it, mm-hmm. which is a big deal.
It's very important. You know, for some clients, maybe they have never been able to express anger, mm-hmm. you know, so if they can come here and talk about that, talk about whatever feeling comes up, and if, you know, they can learn how to express it, and they are not feeling ashamed because of mm-hmm. their emotion, then usually something that has not been resolved on the developmental line can be resolved.
Definitely. So I was wanting to, even just while right now, are there any other techniques, are there any other things that you mm-hmm. may use whenever you're in therapy that we haven't talked about that you'd like to mention?
Yeah. So I just use different tools, and I kind of always think of Bessel van der Kolk, who once mentioned that mm-hmm. you know, like, it's just, you have like a box of tools, and if you just use one, it's like, it's harder to build your house just by using one tool. So mm-hmm. it's kind of nice to have different approaches. And what I like to do, I like to share them with my clients, and I always ask them to pay attention to what speaks to them. And how do they know what speaks to them? If they feel calm, if they have more clarity, if they feel like, oh, you know, this is really like something, you know. So I use, you know.
They're choosing too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big deal.
Right. So I do some tools from psychodynamic. I use stuff from cognitive processing therapy, for example, like a ABC sheets where they can document anxiety-provoking event, their thoughts about it, or their self-talk, how that affected their emotions or behavior. We can look at, you know, is it realistic what they're saying to themselves? We can kind of explore those cognitive distortions and explore if there is a different way of looking at this situation. Yeah. Then I like to use skills from emotional focus therapy, some skills from somatic, psychosomatic experiencing from my training, Pat Ogden's trainings.
Yeah.
So, you know, paying attention to the body. I feel like integrating all of that, body, emotions, mind, and energy. Mm-hmm. I recently became interested in energy modalities. Mm-hmm. So even though those are not evidence-based, but I think it's hard to...
I think, like you said, if you're giving the option to someone and it mm-hmm. speaks to them, and they're choosing that path, since they're choosing it, like I believe, and it sounds like you do too, like people kind of have an intuitive sense about themselves, and they, in some ways, like even if they don't trust themselves, mm-hmm. we kind of trust that they still know some of the things that they need, and if they can somehow let us know, which is kind of what you do. You're like, hey, mm-hmm. here's all these tools.
Yeah.
Which one do you feel like would be something that would fit for you in this situation?
Right. So I created a checklist, actually, like a healthy living checklist. I like to give my clients homework, because I feel like 1 hour is not really enough. It's you know, it's like if you go to see a personal trainer. I mean, it's, you know, 1 hour will be helpful.
Yeah, it's like, here, I'll show you the exercises to do. Now you go and do them on some of your other days too.
Yes, yes. So I created all kind of, some of them are somatic exercises, some of them are like a RAIN exercise, or Name It to Tame It, or ABC, or practicing meditation, or progressive relaxation. So I just kind of have a different, I have this checklist, and the clients can try, they can check it off, they can rate on a scale 1 to 10 how they felt.
Yeah.
And that's how they learn what speaks to them, you know?
I think that that's really important, and especially you are one of the first therapists I talked to that talk about using any type of energy work too. And I think your openness to trying and using different types of techniques like says a lot. I think we were talking a little bit before we actually started recording. I want to bring this in about how much you love to learn and about all the different trainings that you like to go to.
Yeah.
And I feel like that probably really serves your clients in a very advantageous way.
Yeah.
That you're continually learning and you're continually getting new tools to put in that toolbox to give them the option to use if it feels like it's something that'll fit for them.
Yeah, I became very interested in these energy modalities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I mentioned, they're not evidence-based, but we know we are energy body. Mm-hmm. So in the last 2 years, I have attended many workshops and trainings. And then, you know, I have seen therapists, like for my own work, because I always test everything on myself first to see if it speaks to me.
Yeah.
Stuff like Reiki and Theta healing and Pranic healing. So I just finished Reiki level 1. I don't practice that with my clients because I just don't, I'm not comfortable yet with that. But I do practice Pranic healing techniques. So I finished level 1 a few months ago, and I have seen really amazing results with some of my clients, such as I have clients who say, you know, I had so much energy today after the exercise we did. I was able to clean my house or to cook, or I didn't feel really overwhelmed. Or, and I have experienced it myself when I went through some of these workshops or classes where I felt like, oh my God, look all the energy I have, and I'm doing all these tasks I don't like to do. Meaning like stuff maybe that it's not my passion, but I'm like, I had energy to do it. I felt more motivated. It was easier to do it. So with some of these energy modalities, they believe that symptoms first appear in an energy field, and then they find their way in the body or the mind. So I don't know. I just find it very fascinating and interesting. And again, you know, some of my clients are open to it. Some of them are, no, I'm not doing that. But I respect where they are. And I,
Well, I think that the curious mind is something that is needed, and is something that's a very good thing to have on your side as a therapist, as a counselor. Because you got to be curious about what's going on with your client. And you got to be curious about, all right, what is it that I'm thinking? What is it that they're thinking? What is it that's going on here? Let's explore this. Let's investigate this. And being able to do that in more than one way is definitely a good thing.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of wondering, can you tell me a little bit about the meditation work that you do with some of your clients? I know that we're kind of talking, you know, while we're not recording, you said that you do this with a lot of your clients. Give me a little bit of idea what that looks like.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of meditation. I do it myself almost daily, and I feel it's one of the best medicines for mind and body. We know from research in neuroscience, and from research from Harvard, that 8 weeks of meditation will create new neural pathways. It can help calm our mind, and we can help us regulate our emotions. We can have a deeper insights. So what I do all kind of different meditations. Sometimes I do guided meditation with my clients. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do something called Theta meditation, where you're in a deep, deep, deep state of relaxation. Mm-hmm. You are more connected to what, you know, Theta brain frequency. I'm really interested in these brain frequencies. And in order for us to feel calm, we have to be either in alpha or theta frequency. So from my personal professional experience, I find that very healing. So meditation is something I encourage, and I ask my clients to explore and see how they feel. My adolescents that I work with really love, all of them love meditation. Sometimes I just, with the younger kids, I might even use crystals when they do meditation and see if they can feel the different energy, just to make it more interesting for them. And there are all kind of different meditation. There are also meditation apps that they can do during the week.
Yeah, like Headspace and different things like that. I think that
Insight Timer.
Yeah, meditation has definitely made a big impact on our field as far as understanding how helpful it is. I'm wondering, I want to circle back now to something that we were talking about at the very beginning. I want to talk a little bit about the assessments that you do. And can you tell me a little bit about those?
Yeah, so the assessments are mostly with my clients who come from a different backgrounds, like refugees or immigrants. So I started to do these assessments many years ago when a large number of refugees were losing their benefits because they couldn't become American citizens due to disabilities they have. So if somebody, let's say, has a social security disability, in order to keep those benefits, you have to become American citizen. But some of my clients who are, let's say, Nepali or Afghani, who some of them had all kind of like a traumatic brain injury, they have PTSD, some of them are illiterate. There is no way they can learn English or prepare for the citizenship exam. So many years ago, I started working with different legal agencies here and psychiatrists. So sitting down with the clients, doing detailed assessment, so in just different tests on their cognitive abilities, you know, like diagnosing maybe PTSD or if they have depression or Alzheimer's or, you know, and then I would help psychiatrists write these assessments because most medical doctors, they don't have really time to sit down for a few hours. It can take 3 to 5 hours really to do this. So I learned many years ago how to do this because I started with lawyers and I learned about what's how to write this assessment. So that's one of the that's something
that I do on the side. What a cool thing to be able to do! I think that I've only met a couple therapists that do that do more like not only comprehensive assessments but do assessments with any type of immigrants or even any type of legal assessment. So it's always good for me to meet someone that does those and knows how to do them and can write up reports, because I feel like there aren't very many of us that do.
And I mentioned earlier that I work with immigration lawyers who have like a political asylum seekers. So I have done that in the past as well and still like to do it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking this time to be able to meet with me and talk with me about these people that you serve. It's always good meeting a fellow therapist that is very curious and very open to learning all the different things that are out there, all the different techniques, and you're still curious and learning and being able to pass that on to your clients. It sounds like you're doing some really wonderful work. Thank you for taking the time to be able to talk with me, and it was a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. I enjoy meeting you, and thank you for the other interviews. I listen to them and I learn a lot, so thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of St. Louis Therapist Spotlight. The music that you're listening to is called Lobby Time by Kevin McLeod, and that is licensed under Creative Commons. And you can find more great tunes like this at creativecommons.com.